Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future we all hope for. And every week, as you already know by now, I get joined by one of the wonderful members of the EV Cafe. One of the wonderful ones weren't available, so I've got John. works every time. Oh, gosh. Hey, John.
Love you.
But every week we get to talk to some of the wonderful innovators, pioneers, and collaborators in our industry. And as always, we have one of those very people in Taco Althoff from Webfleet. Taco, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
It's our pleasure to have you. For those of you that are watching, very angelic. It's quite a delightful image. Multiple halos, no less.
Exactly.
But Taco, we like to get to know people as we get along. So I have a little interesting fact about you, and I'd love for you to talk to us a little bit about this. You are a musician. What instrument is it that you play, and are you any good?
Ah, that's always a hard question to answer, obviously. Well, yes, indeed. I spent a big deal of my life making music, and I play the piano, I sing, but mainly I'm a saxophonist. In university, that's how I made my money. I performed a lot. There were a lot of happy people dancing, so that tells you something, right? We played jazz, and that's something is always good for sort of the drinks for the reception. Around that time, also the whole thing of DJs playing with saxophonists came, and that's what I started doing then. And I still do that quite a lot. I always thought that when I'm getting older and bolder, then I will also stop doing this. But no, it just keeps on going, and I still do it very often. Yeah.
Now, Taco, you mentioned that you started to do this when you were in university, and I've always wanted to ask the saxophonist, do you get the girls because it's one of those instruments that girls just love?
So, more than the bass player. That's basically how you should see it. It's very early in life. You have to decide which instrument do I pick. And then there are some repercussions of choosing that you, basically you're already alluded to. But this is...
I'm currently Googling saxophone lessons in your area.
Taco, I have a feeling that might be the best answer we've ever received to any question ever. Great question, John. Even better answer, Taco. Thank you so much. So when I noticed this little fact that you were a saxophonist primarily, but I didn't know a singer and a piano player as well. One of those really annoying musicians where everything comes easy to you or naturally very much, by the sounds of it anyway. What do we have to do to get you to go and get your saxophone and play us a little bit of Baker Street?
That's going to be very costly.
We've got to pay you?
That is indeed, that we would have to negotiate a fee, and then that would take a long time. I'm not sure if that is...
Paul's met his commercial match. I've never seen anybody...
I can send you some YouTube links, and then you could you could watch that. And I think that's probably a better use of our time here.
Okay. I, like John says, I've clearly met my match as far as that's concerned. But I mean, it's exciting, isn't it? And you mentioned that, you know, how you get your business and the importance of doing a good job, and obviously in your role as Webfleet and in your role when you're a musician, it seems that word of mouth is an important element of the way that you go about your business. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, right. So it's funny that you mentioned it, because I only recently I realized that how I have been doing my business as a saxophonist was by not doing the business. Was by just making sure that the people were really happy and that the dance floor was filled and that you make sure that they leave happy, and then the word of mouth makes sure that that you get new gigs. And especially when it's at really important times. Something like a wedding, people don't have a second chance. Well, most people don't, right? And or at least it's always the idea that it will be the last time they get married.
Yes, and, so let's go with that.
Let's go with that. And so that's why they really don't want to mess it up. And the only way to make sure you get a good DJ with a saxophonist is by looking what you have experienced yourself. If you had a really great party where it really worked, everybody was full in sweaty at the end of the dance. Now, that's great. Then everybody has had a great time, and that's how you get new jobs. And that's also, right, with innovation, there's two types of innovation. There's sustaining innovation, and that is basically bringing a new feature to a product. And then there is radical innovation. With radical innovation, there's such big changes that you're bringing that it's not about price. It's not about whether you have this feature or whether you have that feature. No, what it is about is, does it work? Is there any proof that it really works? Now, and that is why I, this is what I keep telling my team all the time, is guys, we just have to do a really good job with the first few customers. And after that, that will be your, how your business will come. So at this stage, it could be we are building new products for electrification, helping to accelerate the transformation to electric fleets. But I'm not selling. I'm trying to convince customers to work with me so that we can build a great party. And I know that if you build that once, others will come in the future. And then after that, once all of that has settled down, yes, there will be sustaining innovation again. And then people will start looking at price or features or whatever. But at this point, it's similar to that word of mouth principle that I do as a saxophonist. Yeah.
So let's assume, Taco, that there are people out there in our world, in the fleet world, who don't know who Webfleet are, what goes on at the Webfleet party. How would you tell them about what you do at a high level? What is it that Webfleet does?
Now, what Webfleet does is they take data from vehicles across all the different brands and all the different types. And this data they make available for use cases like safety, improving safety, improving productivity, improving or reducing costs, reducing CO2. Now, that is basically what they do with electrification. The data points are changing of the vehicles themselves, but also the data that these vehicles need to connect with and work with, like the charging systems, etc. Now, that also means that the use cases are changing. So, yeah, basically on two sides, there's a lot changing, and that makes it very challenging, but for a creator like me, very fun to work in that area.
So, I mean, it's a very poorly known secret that I'm going to share with you, Taco, but or a poorly kept secret, I should say. I hate data. But I love what comes from the data. How do you bring it to life for the customers? You talked about being creative there and obviously kind of giving it some life and features and face. How do you bring it to life for your customers?
Yeah, so, well, you always need to start with the benefit, right? And that's how you had it. The sales 101, right? It is sell what it does for them, how it improves their life, if it reduces their time, if it increases their comfort, and etc. In my case, with electrification, that's a bit harder because there's a whole industry that doesn't know what their pains are going to be yet, right? So what we do is we educate about what is that future going to look like, what are the needs that you're likely to encounter, and how are we solving those needs? Now, and that is something, how do you bring that then to life? In my view, you should always be able to clearly show what it does, right? So for a fleet manager, you can have a presentation of 30 minutes and that can be interesting. But if you just show what in his morning process, where the bottlenecks are and what makes him or her feel stressed about their work, for instance, and then how you solve that, it could be just a highlight of a feature or something. Now, that is what I think is what really speaks to people. And then it's the old saying of a picture says 1,000 words, because yeah, then they perfect. Immediately get what you're how you're trying to help them. And then it could be, and it saves time, and it lets you sleep, and it saves cost, and your boss will be happy, and everyone, that they can fill in themselves. You don't have to spell it out anymore.
That I can get on board with.
So that is what we are trying to do. And that's also why it is really important to do early prototyping, right? And then with prototyping, people always think about wireframes and sketches and stuff like that. And sketches can be good, but I also ask my team to really make it engaging, because the customer really needs to be able to engage with it and to feel like, hey, this is where the screen I will be looking at 3 years from now, when all of my trucks and my vans will have a different range because they're of a different age of battery and they have different drivers that have different skills in how good they drive with an EV and how they can get the range out of the vehicle. There's different vehicle models with different ranges, etc. They will have a much harder time. Luckily, it can very easily be solved with software. That is how I think to make it fun, right? There's data. Data doesn't say anything, right? Those kind of claims of we process 1 billion data points per day. Yeah, you could have one engineer somewhere that thinks, oh, that's quite a lot, but 99.9 people in the world have no idea what that is, if that is a lot or not, right? So I totally get your point, and actually I think I agree. data is not the thing, it's just an instrument to get to real benefits. Yes,
I'm fascinated in your career path, Taco, because we have a similarity. I was a lawyer, and I understand that you were a lawyer, and you just mentioned the F word, fun. And there isn't a lot of fun in law, and I no longer practice law, and neither do you. What took you on that journey to leave the legal profession and start working with data and helping fleets to decarbonize?
Yeah, so as it is difficult to improve climate change as a musician, it's also quite hard to do that as a lawyer. Of course, you can have all these lawsuits against big oil companies, but then there's the last point you mentioned, where's the fun in that? And actually, I was a bankruptcy lawyer, so what I was basically with, so I started doing that with the idea that if a company goes into Chapter 11, for instance, yeah, then you can still do something to save it, and then you can make it better, and that people keep their jobs, etc. So there was a positive thinking behind it. But I learned that I was basically tearing down companies constantly. Yeah. And it interfered with my sole purpose of being a builder. And I like to build, I like to create. It took me a long time to really get to that, such a simple, basic answer, but that's it. And I'm constantly thinking, how can I improve this? How can we get over this hurdle? Is there a hurdle? Is the customer only thinking there is a hurdle? It's all those things that really make me tick. And that's why I had to leave that profession. I do must say that I'm very thankful that I started there, because it did bring me a lot of knowledge. I'm not scared of reading a contract, which can save you a lot of problems down the path. I understand the importance of making good agreements with people, just spelling it out, discussing it, and that's how you get a really good relationship, how you remain, keep the trust in the relationship, and that is, yeah, basically, I'm experienced in keeping relationships good, and I also think that that is very important when you are navigating a transformation like this, where everybody is scared of the future, of all the changes that may be coming. So that's
very true, very true.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense, the kind of approach that you've brought there, and I think we often get quite afraid of legal stuff and contracts and stuff like that. But when you're laying out the foundation of what the future looks like, it's almost like the wedding vows, isn't it? You've been speaking about kind of playing at a wedding and at a party. You're laying out what the future looks like. You know, are you going to trust each other? Are you going to be faithful to each other? Are you going to like be kind and all of those good things that we kind of and a contract should sort of do those same things, right? So it's a really strong foundation for what you've then gone on to deliver in your life. And it leads me to think about what are you most proud of that you're delivering today, and or have you delivered in your life? I mean, is there a couple of things, and it doesn't have to be just Webfleet today. It might have been a particularly good performance of Baker Street at a wedding, but or whatever. I'm going to get
Baker Street
out. Let it go. but what are you most proud of delivering, and what's really front and center for you at the moment?
Yeah, this is also a very easy answer. It's very close to what we've already just discussed, to be honest, because I'm quite proud to having been able to build a team of really good performing people that are now working on this, that what I'm doing right now. And that team is also fun, but it's very challenging for all of the people in my team, right? We're a what they call a corporate startup, so we have to go as fast as a startup, but as a part of the corporate. So you get basically all the delaying factors of a corporate, while there they have the expectance that you need to go fast, even though there's all kinds of ways that they are preventing you from going fast. Now, and my team is dealing with that tension every day, and it's actually it can sound really cool and nice that you can go in a team and invent something new with customers, and if you don't have the current customer relationships that you need to keep up or something. Yeah, but there's a lot of other tension that is there as well now. And I'm very happy to know that people are really enthusiastic in the team and really working hard every day to just to push through. Yeah, how do you call that? Really, you really have to keep trucking. Is that the English expression? Just keep going, keep pushing. And sometimes you think, there's nothing come out of this. And now after 2 years, we really see a lot of companies coming back to us. Hey, now we remember you were speaking about this. Where are you now? And then, yeah, we are here. Let's go do a pilot. But yeah, it's you really have to find the successes that you want to celebrate there. But that's what I'm most proud about. And actually, that is now. So maybe it's similar to a party, right? That it's everybody is working hard. Everybody is having fun. So that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, brilliant. You talked about successes and how you quantify success. 2025 is around the corner. Paul and I are meeting at the end of next week with our team to look at 2025 and what we can achieve commercially. What are your areas of focus for next year?
So my area, so we've recently launched Charger Monitoring, which is one of those products that really came from listening to fleet managers deeply and understanding what they're worried about. And what we found out, for instance, is that you have the energy companies, they show you a front end of how your chargers are doing. But that doesn't help a fleet manager, because if a vehicle is connected to a charger, but it is not charging or it stops charging during the middle of the night, yeah, that they could have known when they would have logged in doesn't help them. That needs to be connected to the fleet management system in a front end that they understand, which is vehicle centric, not charger centric, and that kind of stuff. Now, and that is where we have the first real good showcases of fleet manager saying, hey, this saved me a lot of worries, right? Now, that is success for now, because that fleet manager will then become an ambassador to other fleet managers. Hey, you know what? What we have now is fleet management connected with the charging system or charging management, and that together makes that I know that whenever a charger is not connected right or it stops charging, the depot manager that is on service that night will get a notification, and I'm sure that all of my vehicles will be available in the morning. That is what I think is success. And that is something different than we've got 50 charger monitoring licenses sold, right? That is, for me, not the measure of success. Are we truly able to take those worries away? And is it something that they are really happy about? And are they talking about it? That's what I'm looking for. Now, and the next year, we're going to launch also more EV driver coaching services, because... we were spending a lot of time with the energy markets, and they then talk about you could reduce your charging cost with 10-15% and stuff like that, and we're like, okay, now that's very good. But then speaking with fleets, they actually tell us, you know what, I just want to make sure my vehicles get back to the depot at the end of the... And I first got to make sure that I can run my business. So then we found out that things like your worst driver gets half the range out of the vehicle as your best driver. So it's very nice that you can improve 20%. But if it's 50% just by the way a driver drives, okay, that is where the value is. Now, and it's not just about saving costs. It is about having the assurance that you can reliably do your business with an electric vehicle. And that, I believe, will really help the acceleration into electric fleets. Now, that is something that also there, what is success is, if, even in prototype stage, if we've run fleet managers through it, do they genuinely say, hey, I want to get this. If you, where can I sign up? Now, that is really a success for me, because then I know when we build it, it will go.
And I love this. Success is about kind of really understanding where you can add value. Because value, I mean, the values that you've just pointed out, I think, and I think it's worth people that are listening understanding that you predominantly work in the truck and van sector. I know you do cars as well, but truck and van is where you've made your name, and you're probably well known for and deliver a lot of the success that we're talking about. And in terms of getting that efficiency, getting the vans back, getting the trucks back each day, and the value of drivers, because as car drivers, We almost have some benefit in our pocket from a taxation point of view. Personally, we also, you know, it's a fast car and it's all that sort of stuff. With a van, this is a tool, and with a truck, it's a tool to do a job which has incredible value for a business. I think the van sector in the UK is worth £1.6 billion a day, and feel free to challenge me on that number, anybody. But it's so great that you're bringing value to your customers, and this seems to come from you. This seems to be something that is built in you. Who's your biggest influence? What's your biggest influence? How has this person been formed? Well, who's influenced you?
Yeah, so obviously there's a lot of musicians that I could mention, but in my working life, I've been influenced by Clayton Christensen a lot. He's the writer of The Innovator's Dilemma, and I think it's really fun to experience in my job as a corporate startup manager that all the cliches as he's writing about, I sort of can do a innovation bingo list. But, yes, I've experienced this. So I've done it now once with a strategic project at when I was still working at TomTom, and now this electrification project. And yes, there is difficulties when you bring an innovation to the same sales team that also still has to sell the existing business, basically. Yeah, that interferes. One is a new thing that takes a lot of time and effort to get their heads around, and they fear they don't have the right knowledge and that kind of stuff. Now, and then every now and then, when I start to get frustrated and I start getting angry at people, why don't they do this? Are they why are they not helping me succeed? That's when I can come back to that book, and then really clearly he describes it's not them, it's not they want to do this, this is how people behave, this is why they do it. And then, yeah, you get a bit of a structure in how you can move along with tolerance of their behavior and without having your frustrations about it. And that keeps it fun, right? And that is what why I wanted to mention that name, and I would suggest anyone to read that book.
I think we should read that book, John. We offline, we will take this book and go and find about it so that we can communicate and do all that good stuff.
I've just started to read again after many years of avoiding books. I remember when I started to study law, one of my lecturers said to me, you may have enjoyed reading up until now, but as you start your legal career, you will be forced to read so much that you will lose the enjoyment. Did the same thing happen to you, and have you rediscovered reading, or has it stayed a constant?
Nay, for me, so I do a lot of reading as a lawyer, but when you become a lawyer, you've already taken a route early on in your study career that basically didn't allow you to do a lot of economics and a lot of, or at least in the Netherlands, business knowledge. So I started reading these business books when I wanted to make that change into business. And I actually liked it, because it's even a business book is a lot more fun than a lot of the legal stuff you read, right? And it was also helping me get the jargon right and understand what marketing was, because when I was a lawyer, I honestly did not fully understand what marketing was compared to sales. Or I had a idea, but I didn't fully understand it. And then I also really found that it was much easier to feel engaged with it. So I probably should have found that out a bit earlier in my school. But yeah, you know, better late than never.
So if there was one piece of advice that you have read that you've clung to and is a central part of how you think and believe, what is that thing?
Yeah, I would. That's difficult of what someone wrote. Yeah, I think it's the old saying of Pippi Langkous is her name. It was this show you had when we were children with the red hairs and the two ponytails that were standing like that. I don't know if they aired it in the UK. It was originally a Swedish show. But she said, I've never done that. So probably I will be very good at it. That was her way of thinking.
Oh, I love it.
Right? So, and yes, that's like the glass half full. So I've never done that. Hey, let's go. Let's try it out. And that's honestly where I have learned to not do that too much. I've learned how to make sure I'm not constantly looking for new stuff. No, at some point you have it. But yes, still, when you think you have it, you need to stay curious. If something, a new data point comes in, hey, does this change what I'm doing, right? Instead of, I don't know, I've never gone into that. but it's not, I don't know if I'm going to be any good at it. In the end, everything is perfectly understandable that people do, and right, this energy side, for instance, can be daunting or scary for people. All of a sudden, we're talking about kilowatts per hour instead of liters per mile or whatever. It doesn't really matter, right? If you work with it for a month, all of those the science behind this, has lost your brain, has left your brain. You're just looking at a new metric which you do your business with. So yeah, that's
where you're really helpful, isn't it? Because what you do is you respond to contact from fleet customers, new fleet customers, who have a fear of engaging with Webfleet or other telematics companies, the corporate startups, because they're not sure what they're getting into. And I suspect that actually we all need to be a little bit braver to say, hello, Webfleet, we recognize that you are a trusted friend, and that we are feeling the fear, but we're going to do it anyway. And you can help to take that fear away.
Yeah, so it's funny you say that. I think the first fear they have is that they think I'm trying to sell something.
Yes.
And honestly, we're not at the stage where we have to sell anything. We need to find out what we could hopefully sell a few years from now in this new world. Yeah. But I'm not selling. There is no market at this point, right? There is no volume. It is about making sure we can really find out what fleet managers need, what the drivers need, what the CFO of the company needs, what the planner needs, what the dispatcher needs, etc. And then I think having a bigger company like Bridgestone behind Webfleet should make it trustworthy that there is enough financial power behind it, that we have the time and the means to really do this properly.
Yes.
That's what I hope that people would start believing and trusting us in.
Mm, absolutely.
Now, you'll have to forgive a slight element of background noise, everybody. I do have builders next door that are not very considerate. But anyway, so let's move on. But, your commitment, your journey so far, and your commitment to delivering value and understanding your customers and really kind of wanting to give a great party to everybody. I mean, it sounds idyllic. It's you've had a really cool life by the sounds of things. But I'm just always conscious that, you know, we can be lulled into a false sense of security and think that there is a perfect life out there. Tell me of a time where you had to dig really deep in your life, both personally or in work, and how that kind of shaped you in terms of the person that you are today. So a difficult time, how it shaped you and what it's done for you in your work life today.
Yeah, it's funny that you take all of this as sounding all really fun, because actually, it may sound spectacular, but it's all really hard. It's really hard to get people to want to talk to you. It's really hard to get people to want to share their deepest thoughts with you, then wanting to do a pilot with you, etc. You're constantly selling everything that you create or think up. First, you have someone else that first starts to have to believe you that would be something worth spending time on. I very often actually think, why do I keep doing this? Why don't I just take a job in an existing market with existing products where you need to get it the sales from point A to 5% more or 10% more, whatever the target is. Of course, that can be very hard as well, but there's already a lot of stuff that is already there, right? And what I do, you could very easily every week think, you know, that's why am I doing this? Let's stop it. Let's look for a different job, because nothing works. Nothing is there. Everything we do is constantly, there's something coming out of the as a rabbit out of the head of, oh, we couldn't have believed that this would be the problem. And this can be behavioral. It can be just as one person in the process that, I don't know, doesn't like a color or something, and that's how it stops. It can be really unfair, illogical, etc. But you just have to keep going. And if you believe in it, you have to make sure that your team believes in it, that everybody keeps the same mindset. And that is what I'm doing now. And I did it also in my previous project, when I just talked about. It was really hard bringing it to market, right? And that is just genuinely one of the hardest jobs that exists.
That is a character that is built in life. I think very few people are born with that tenacity, that resilience. Can you reflect on a time where that resilience, that determination was formed by a particularly difficult one, you know, perhaps an event where it took you really to rock bottom and you began to realize that you can get beyond this through resilience?
No, so from it's the thing that I basically started off my life with the wrong career. That is something that really formed me. Yeah, it was right for all the. I understand why I made those choices logically, but I'm very happy that I was able to accept and acknowledge that I was not happy, that I was not going to be happy in that life, and therefore also would not be proud of myself and ever feel fulfilled. And then there was a whole period that had to bring me where I am now, right? And that is, that just took a lot of determination, getting over insecurities, studying hard to make sure you don't, yeah, because you're always afraid. I didn't study for this. I studied something else. Why would they listen to me, etc.? That whole imposter syndrome. Yeah, it's a lot of hard work. And personal growth that you need for that. And then later on, when you start getting into a position where you need to do that with a group of people, you need to help them do that. Yeah, that's times three or five, right? And then they need to have the trust that you know what you're doing, even though the job is not knowing what we're doing and just finding ways how to get a structure into to knowing what we're doing and why we're doing it in the shortest time period. That's how I always explain it. We go in, we try stuff, we triangulate, we move, we reiterate, but the only goal is doing that as fast as possible, because that will make it the least costly and will get you to success faster.
Really helpful. Yes. Great to know that.
It's a brilliant ethos, and you're clearly demonstrating, Taco, some very strong leadership qualities. But leaders sometimes need a little bit of help in delivering. So we have something called the magic wand that we like to give to our guests to help them overcome something that they can't do on their own. So is there a thing that you change about work or the workplace, the industry, that you could wave your magic wand and achieve it instantly?
Then first thought is obviously that so my real purpose is to make sure that climate change is stopped, right, or even reversed. But then that's the thing, right? Since watching The Inconvenient Truth, I think everybody remembers that of one of those periods in your life where it was the first time you really thought, like, hey, there's this respected person talking about all of these fairy tales, but he's saying it's actually true and we need to do something about it. And that's what made me sort of intrigued with the fact that logic is not what drives people. So if I would be able to have a magic wand and wave it and then change something, I would want people to, become rational and logical, because that's not how it goes. There is a lot of science, and there's a lot of logical thing of what we should do, and still it takes so much effort to change behaviors, to get people to trust that, and to also think the rest of the world is also going to do this. If that would be just how we as humans operate, people wouldn't need the trust, and everybody would just think, we need to do that now. Okay, let's go. Right, next time my van goes out of the lease term, there's going to be an electric van, because the cost of ownership is lower, and people assure me that you can do your business reliably. Now, we can tell it, we can prove it. But as you know, that's not how it immediately changes, and that is really what I would wish for. However, then I would also want that to disappear again once we've tackled climate change, because the world wouldn't be very fun.
I was going to ask you about that, because there's a passion in you which is very clear, and you are not a drone who just thinks in logical terms. And there's that balance, isn't there, between what you logically know and what you feel, and they're difficult to balance.
So indeed, what people feel like, what is normal, what they should do, it takes a lot of logic over a lengthy period of time for that feeling to change, and that is, I think, everybody is noticing that in how they're watching, how they use their power, and how much gas they use while showering, and that kind of stuff. For everyone, it is a lot different than it was 3 years ago, probably, right? So it is moving. I would just like it to move faster, because there's a lot of weather that is changing, which we should.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And I think, you know, it's... The word that's sticking in my head is mission. And you've articulated that really nicely, in the sense of that you have a clear mission to stop climate change, and your medium for the mission, your method of getting the mission accomplished in our sector in transport is your job. And you've kind of embraced your job, because, like you said, saxophony and maybe being a bankruptcy lawyer didn't change the climate. It didn't move the needle in the right way, but clearly this does, right? This is a match made in heaven for you.
Now, at least I wake up every day knowing that this job could help. I could move a needle with this. So it's only myself that is then in between it, and not something like my job or whatever, right? I'm in a position where I can do it, so then I should try my best to really try and help fleets take away their fears of moving to operating an electric fleet, and that hopefully will accelerate that move. That will, very much contribute to fighting climate change. So,
indeed,
I should be happy, John, that I got this opportunity.
Yes, absolutely, John. I think we've found, as always, that it's the people that make this industry great. And we've discovered a wonderful human being in Taco. Taco, thank you for today. John, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I've been really inspired to speak to you, Taco, and I'm taking away from today's podcast, staying curious. I think that is absolutely the key, that there is a lot that we do, and I'm very proud of. There is still more that needs to be done. And by being curious about those things, we will go and find solutions, the right people to work with, the right processes and systems to put in place to accelerate change. But staying curious is key to that. And I thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks. That's I totally agree.
Yeah, and Taco, equally, from right at the beginning with you wanting to create a party where everybody finishes the night all sweaty and we'll not go anywhere with that, but understand the image of being on the dance floor and just kind of getting on with it, but creating a work environment too, which is fun, which is energetic, which is achieving something of the mission of the party, let's call it like that. It's been a real encouraging journey, and also picking the right job. And anybody in the wrong job today, you know, take Taco's lead and pick the right job. Pick a job that you will get up feeling, I can move the needle, I can make a difference, I can drive the change to a zero emission world. Taco, any thoughts you want to leave us with?
If you've heard this podcast and you have some fears about reliably running a fleet, just get in touch with us. We would be happy to talk it over with you. And don't be worried that we will try to sell you something. That's that's what I would like to say.
And I think, you know, if anybody has listened to this podcast and got this far, I think that will be clear to them that they're able to come talk to you or to one of your team and feel that they're going to get the help that they need to make informed and effective decisions, driving efficiency and making a difference in their world. Really, really good to talk to you today, Taco. And we look forward to learning more and hearing more from the team at Webfleet as, you know, we go on in our partnership. But it's been great to hear from you today. So thank you very much for joining us.
Now, thanks a lot for allowing me on your podcast. I always really enjoy listening to it. And also, I think it's really fun how you present it. So, I wanted to say that to you guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. That's really kind. Well, guys, if you want more fun, and we occasionally have a little bit of fun, please do kind of check out all of the different podcasts. We're approaching the big 100. So there's plenty to go at, and some amazing people just like Taco that are making a real difference in the world of sustainability, but you know, the broader world, and people telling their story, their journey, and what they do and how they do it. So please do go and check out that evcafe.org or Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can hear it all there. Obviously, catch up with us from the news every Friday at 10 and once a month for the webinar at Wednesday, or at a show near you. In the meantime, have a great day, everybody, and we look forward to catching up with you next time.